Let's get into it. I'm a man in the house, purposely. I'm a dad and a spouse. I could have break about all the cash in the account, but none of that amounts to the fact that your boy is the man of the house. Welcome back to the Man of the House podcast, hosted by yours truly, Jason Tyree. For those who are listening for the first time, welcome. I am a husband of almost 18 years, a father of four, and this is episode 3. And let me tell you, when I initially thought about doing this podcast, I did not include the fact that I'll be going through hell personally. Usually that would cause me to postpone things or not do it. But in a way, this is kind of me documenting the valley that I'm going through right now. I'm going to get a little bit into that as far as how I'm doing. If you've been listening to the previous podcast, you have a little bit more insight into what's been going on with me lately. Am I okay? You know, the last episode was titled, I'm Not Okay. So I know you guys want to get an update on that. I will give that to you. But before I do that, I wanted to talk about something in particular for the men of the house. And well, obviously, this is the Man of the House podcast, so there's a general target audience, but it's not totally inclusive, you know. It's for anybody who wants to listen. I do want to touch on a particular topic that I don't think really gets discussed as it pertains to men of the house who go through this particular thing that I'm going to talk about. But even before I talk about that, before I talk about the topic of the day, and before I talk about me and how I'm doing, giving you an update on myself, I want to at least say, because now that I had time to kind of listen to the first two episodes, what I don't want to do is make it seem like, oh, being a man of the house is just, I don't know, dog. It's not for me. This is rough. This is terrible. Where's the encouragement? Sell this thing, Jason. Sell it. I will say that being the man of the house is very rewarding. It's worth fighting for. It's worth fighting through some things for. But it's so invaluable. There's not enough money in the world that would compare to the role that God has given me as being man of the house. It is, like I'll tell you every episode, it's a tough position to be in. It's not glamorous. It's not Dr. Huxtable or whatever TV dad you want to throw in there. Certainly not like that. There's going to be peaks. There's going to be valleys. But man, it is so worth it to be a patriarch of a lineage of future generations to come, where they can look back and say, hey, my grandfather, my great grandfather, he did this. He did these things so we can have a better life. His ceiling was our floor. You know what I mean? And most importantly, once you really get the grasp and the understanding of being the man of the house,
you want to fight for your kids and your future grandkids and your great grands, because you are essentially breaking generational curses if you're going about it right. I remember having a conversation with my uncle, and we're just talking about my dad's side of the family, which I didn't know that much. I knew a decent portion, but not a lot. And he was just educating me on the history of my dad's side. And at one point, you know, the Tyree name just had a bad rep, you know, it's like all them crazy Tyree boys and stuff like that. And, you know, now the future generations, you know, I got my cousins, I got my siblings, my brothers and my sisters. We're rewriting that. We're putting more prestige to the Tyree name. And that's one of the benefits of wanting to be the man of the house. Breaking those generational curses. There's a lot of people, you know, who are either my age or a little bit older, a little bit younger, that are realizing, hey, I don't want to do things how my parents used to do it. There's certain things I don't want to carry on. And sometimes that comes with a fight. Breaking generational curses, man. Sometimes all hell comes at you because you're doing something out of the norm for that lineage. And so that's part of the weight. That's part of the responsibility. That's part of the toll that happens when you're trying to do this thing right. And that's what makes it worth it, though. I mean, being the man of the house sometimes you may have to concede to the fact that, hey, I may not fully see this thing pan out. To have a dream, to have a goal that outlives you, that's a whole different type of dreaming. You know? Like, man, the decisions I'm making right now is going to affect my grandkids, my great-grands. That's why when you think like that in those terms, you move about life differently. I don't just make decisions for me. I'm making decisions for a multitude of people. People that I probably would never see. My great, 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 great grandkids. Probably not going to be here to see them. But if I do this thing right, hopefully I'll be mentioned. You know? But anywho, to those who are aspiring to start a family and be the man of the house, it's great. It's great. It's a lot. And y'all just so happen to catch me in one of those funks, one of those crossroads of bearing the weight and responsibility of this role. And let me also say too, a lot of the stuff that I'm currently going through, it's not 100% because I'm the man of the house. Let me clear that up too. There are some other things, and, you know, I'm getting ready to attend therapy sessions about it. But there's some other things that I need to get to the bottom of and, you know, clear up and get more of an understanding of and things like that. So with that being said, I do want to talk about a particular topic. So I want to say, I'll say early last year, early 2023, my wife, she was pregnant. Let me back up. I'm going to back up to 2014. In 2014, my wife got pregnant. And we were, she was, okay, let me be very transparent real quick. I, in particular, didn't want to have another kid after the third child. But I think we came to an agreement that, hey, all right, let's try for one more. Now, the gap of age between our kids, my firstborn and my secondborn is about a year and a half apart. Second and thirdborn, 11 months apart. So within a 2.5 year span, we had three kids. Our fourth child is 5 year gap between the third and the fourth. But before we had our fourth child, my wife was pregnant in 2014. And unfortunately, she experienced a miscarriage. Now, the first three kids came out, no issues at all, right? So we were used to, for lack of a better term, batting 1,000, 100% with pregnancies, right? So when we came across the miscarriage, it took us both by surprise. And I remember the first miscarriage that she had, and it was a lot because from my point of view, and I've talked about this on a Facebook Live before, but I wanted to make this a topic on this particular episode. I felt helpless. I felt like there was nothing I could do because it wasn't like I was having the baby. It wasn't like I was delivering the miscarriage. And that attachment was different because none of this was like physically happening to me, but it was happening to my wife. And when you can't, like most men, they want to solve things, they want to fix things, but there was nothing to really fix. You just had to go through it. And so when the miscarriage happened, I'm just sitting in the waiting room like, what's going on? Is she okay? And even after the miscarriage, it was like, what can I do to at least bring a smile to your face or get you through this day? And I really felt helpless. That was a very, very difficult time. And just seeing my wife go through the pain and suffering and the sadness and depression of that miscarriage, it took a toll on me because I don't ever like seeing my wife in that state, you know? So that was rough. And I became paranoid, like, yo, if we try again, like, I don't want you to go through this again. But through conversation and through faith and everything, we tried again. And in 2015, a year later, we had Levea. And so that was that. And for the sake of transparency, again, in my mind, I'm thinking we're done. Oh, we're done. Because I grew up small home. It was just my mother, my older brother, my grandmother, and myself. And my brother and I, 13 and a half years apart. So he's in a completely different generation. In fact, he's pretty much out the home because he's grown up. So in so many ways, I was kind of like the only child, even though my brother was around. It was just, it was, you know, it was a small home. My wife, on the other hand, she grew up in a very large home. You know, mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, sister, couple of brothers, couple of foster kids. You know, a lot. Big home. So those two different backgrounds, from my point of view, I'm like, yo, four kids. Whoa, that's a lot. For her, it was like, yo, let's have another one. So fast forward to early last year, 2023. My wife had got pregnant again. And we were very cautious. We was like, we ain't telling nobody till we at least get to the second trimester. And we got to the second trimester. And so for our second trimester visit, we had already planned, like, yo, we already got the post drawn up. This is how we're going to announce it. Yada, yada. It's going to be, you know, cool. And we're just going to check in and see, you know, how the baby's doing. We get in there and she got the ultrasound. The nurse, she's doing the ultrasound machine. And it's, you know, she was talking at first and she just got quiet. And I was like, she's unusually quiet. And she just kept moving that thing. And I was like, oh God, oh no. And she was like, yeah. In so many words, we had lost a baby. The baby had stopped growing at 9 weeks, I'm going to say, 8 or 9 weeks. So, because I think it was week 12 by the time we got the checkup. But we didn't even know we had lost the baby. And so, coming to that realization, I just remember hearing my wife cry and those emotions coming in again. And, you know, this time around, they were able to do a little bit more research and come to find out that, I don't know all the technical terms, so please excuse me, but in so many words, had the baby survived, it would have been a special needs child. But the type of, because it's like three different types. One of them has a, you know, a better chance of surviving, but dealing with special needs. But the other two, it's like, yo, they're not even gonna make it. And so that was the case with this particular child. And it was gonna be a boy. We had low-key been wanting another boy, because we have one boy who's the oldest and then three girls. But that one was harder to deal with because we knew the sex of the baby. We had picked out a name. The baby had actually made it further than the last miscarriage. And it was just a very difficult time. That started off the rocky 2023 for myself, for our family. Man, that was difficult. That was challenging. And so here I am. What do I do? How do I help my wife? I have to continue to be on go mode. I can't stop to have feelings and thoughts about this because I'm the majority breadwinner. So I got to go back to work. And when I come back home, I got to allow my wife to have her time and at least have one parent that's not in the dumps for the kids. And, you know, whatever you're feeling, put it to the side. Got to take one for the team and keep it moving, man. You ain't got time. That's what I was going through. And I think that also started the buildup for me of those compounding feelings and the compounding depression that I never, you know, that blew up. But as a man who goes through miscarriage, which is really never talked about, because I think society has it to where it's like, yo, she should have took a plan B. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I ain't want that baby anywhere. That baby ain't mine. Blah, 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 blah. Nobody talks about the fathers who actually want to be in their kids' lives, the fathers who actually want to do good and be around, who, you know, who want to actually be a participating parent. Society doesn't talk about that. So you don't really get to hear our point of view on how things affect us. But I was devastated. And I had to keep on moving. I didn't have the luxury of dealing with emotions, you know. It was rough. We had a beautiful ceremony. It was I think the hospital was in partnership with a church or a funeral home. It wasn't a church. It was a funeral home. And they gave us all a beautiful ceremony, little caskets and memorabilia and stuff like that. He was able to write son's name, which we named him Jedediah. And was able to send him off properly. I'm sure he's in heaven with... We didn't know the sex of the gender of the first miscarriage, so I felt like the other miscarriage would have been a boy too, but you know. Yeah. They're in the hands of God now. And I look at all my kids as a loan from God. These aren't my kids. These are God's kids, and God loaned them to my wife and I to train, nourish, bring up. And as the man of the house, I'm trying to do the best I can, you know. But fellas who are men of the house, who deal with miscarriages, I can't even fully tell you what to do in that situation, but I can tell you that at some point you do need to let them emotions come out. You do need a breather. You do need you time. Some sort of rejuvenating period. I think that was the mistake that I did. I just kept going. I kept moving, kept dealing. I wouldn't recommend that. Anywho, I got about 6 minutes or so, maybe less. So give y'all an update on me personally. I usually do the four Lees: mentally, spiritually, physically, emotionally. So mentally, I'll do mentally and emotionally together again. Just kind of move this along. I will say that I'm not contemplating suicide. Let me address that for a second. Because it sounds so taboo. You almost feel ashamed to say that you were thinking about suicide. There's so many different levels of that. It's the mere thought of it. Then there's the thought and planning of it. And then there's the actual attempt. And then the actual suicide. So I look at it in four phases. I never went to phase two. I never went to planning it. There was only one time where I semi started planning it, and that was back in 2017. But as of right now, every time I say that I've been contemplating suicide, it's always stayed at stage one. I never made plans to do it. And I think one of the reasons for that is because I know I still have a lot to live for. And I know that, again, just like I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, the decisions that I make is tied to so many people. People who aren't even here on earth yet. We're talking about my future grandkids and great grandkids and all of that. So I keep that in mind, which keeps me out of transitioning to phase two, three, or four of suicide. So let me just put that out there. But I will say that I am still mentally spent, mentally exhausted. I wouldn't say that I'm okay yet. It's trending towards okay, but I know I'm still in the valley. I'm still fighting. I'm still not happy. And that's dealing with the emotionally part too as well. So there's that. I am looking forward to the therapy sessions, which has been kind of difficult to really nail down a therapy session. You would think it'll be readily more available, but that's been a hurdle. Like I guess in my mind, I was like, I would have been had a session by now, but haven't. It's coming up though. But I'm like, yo. But it also lets me know that a lot of people are going through stuff and they need people to talk to. So there's that. Financially, that is still a situation all on its own. But I see a way out. I'm not there, but I see a way out. And physically, I need to get back in the gym, yo. I really do. I was talking about vices last episode. The gym used to be a vice for me. And I need to use that as an outlet. I haven't been consistent going to the gym, but I need to get back into it, which also means I need to get back to eating right. But that's part of the depression where I don't even feel like eating. It affects how you eat too. So, yeah, but just getting back out there and working out, I think, will help as well. And I got this weird pain in my shoulder that's been hurting for like 2 or 3 weeks because I laid on it wrong. So now I have to sleep on my other side of my side sleeper. Anywho, that's it. That's the episode for today, for this week. I will hit y'all up next week. Same time, same place.
purposely. I'm a dad and a spouse. I could break about all the cash in the count, but none of that amounts to the fact that your boy is the man that I